out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is the 4th of July 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we're broadcasting live today at radioarian.com because we have with us today the geopolitical analyst who is Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. Matt, happy Independence Day to you, and how are you doing today?
Well, I spend much of my day listening to Serbian nationalist music, which I do every July 4th. But I need to tell our listeners something, though. Sven Longshanks has a tremendous sense of humor. You may not know this.
Really?
But we were talking about the tanker that was boarded by British Marines off Gibraltar. And I said, wait a minute. If that's from Iran and they almost share a border, what's it doing at Gibraltar? And you said, must be a woman driver. And I spit my Coke out all over my monitor. You know, that's only happened twice.
Oh, it was just the map, the drawing of it. I went all the way around Arabia, all the way around Africa, all the way up to Europe to get to a country that is next door to Iran.
Yeah. More importantly, our listeners need to know that you can be very funny.
Unintentionally, most of the time, I think. I'm not the greatest of comedians. But we've got a serious subject to be getting into today anyway. We're going to be talking about the bank bailouts, the TARP bailout, particularly in America, because we had a big bailouts over here in Britain as well. I think it was in 2008. And we probably got a lot of listeners that weren't really interested in this sort of thing back then, because we're talking about 10 years ago there now. So maybe we should start by just sort of running over what happened and what these bailouts were for, and also, you know, what the initials are, TARP. So should we get into that first, Matt?
Yeah, it stands for Troubled Asset Relief Program. And it's just one of many programs. That was one that the press zeroed in on. I followed this. I was working at the American Free Press at the time. I followed this very closely. The American Free Press was the only paper really getting deep into this stuff, that banks were giving mortgages to just anybody. Credit was being given to just anybody. It was all short-term profiteering. The dollar rates were low. And so everyone thought that this was healthy. It would go on forever. And housing prices went through the roof. So everyone's refinancing, everyone's selling, including me. And of course, it's all fake value. It's all based on debt and media hype. I mean, I saw entire neighborhoods, every sign for sale, everyone refinancing because they stood to make hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, $100,000 house could be $500,000 in 2006. But when you have a system based entirely on debt and hype, eventually banks are going to realize we can't collect on this stuff. And part of the problem was that the same companies that evaluated these debts were the same, these mortgages were the same companies that gave them out. And that was because the regulations had been altered in the late 80s that made it possible for banks to be that consolidated. And so you saw a massive collapse in the economy. And it was a radicalizing event for a lot of people. For me, it was absolutely, it was one thing to have the system come crashing down. It was another thing to demand that the taxpayer bail them out. And I mention this all the time, but the fact that there wasn't a revolt here, that there wasn't outrage everywhere, that the same people who foreclose on your house. Now we're coming and demanding tax money to bail them out. And now it's happening again. Is beyond outrageous. I was shocked that there was no outrage here. It was very muted. And I think really because it's too complicated. Americans need a simple story. Good guy, bad guy, you know. And if it's any more complicated than that, they don't get it. And the way that these things were worded, how they were passed through Congress, it was corruption I haven't seen since the NAFTA debate. They lied constantly. These bailout programs were supposed to include assistance for homeowners, actual normal homeowners. That was all eliminated at the last minute. And people weren't following this. The press didn't really know. These bills were hundreds of pages long. And the people who, you know, Henry Paulson, Secretary of the Treasury, was just Goldman Sachs' CEO. Well, everybody at the Fed, everyone at Treasury, these are all the same people. So this is the worst kind of corruption I could think of from a financial point of view. Well, and the bill now is almost $10 trillion.
I'll say this is, this was the start of what they called in Britain austerity. Which always had been kind of a religious thing before. You did austerities. You sort of gave something up for Lent or whatever. And they called this austerity. And it basically, it meant that they were going to freeze payments on everything, on all the public services, all the wage increases, all the benefits. They basically just froze everything, cut back on all the police. And they said that this was because they needed financial stimulus to the economy. Which the way to do that is to hand out the money to the workers, basically, because then they're going to spend it into the economy and you're going to have the liquidity. But what they did, they paid it all to these banks. They bailed out all of these banks who then didn't put it back into the economy. It just plugged the hole that they had caused. And we're still living in austerity now here in Britain, whereas if they'd actually paid out that money to every homeowner, everybody that was working, gave them a big pay rise, that would have stimulated the economy. That would have put a lot more money into circulation. You would have had a lot more businesses starting up, and the people would have actually benefited from that. And it appears from what you were saying there, Matt, that that was the way that it was actually sold, was that this was going to help the working man. And the reason for this, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I heard the reason for this was because they were encouraging blacks in America to own their own houses. And of course, blacks are notorious at not paying back their debts. You just have to look at Africa to see that. So what they did, they gave sort of mortgages to people that were never going to had any intention of paying it back. And then once they had that mortgage, once they had that on the book saying, this person is going to pay back $100,000 over however many years it is, they would then use that mortgage as a security and say, well, we've got this, we're going to get this money, so we can use that to borrow more money. And that was the start of it, and it snowballed into this huge debt that was all based on this foundation of people that were bad debtors, people that never should have been given any loans in the first place, never should have been given mortgages in the first place. I mean, if somebody can't pay back a loan, the last thing you want to do is give them a huge rate mortgage. So everything was resting on these foundations made of sand, and once they collapsed, that's what brought it all down. And it should have brought the banks down, but it that wasn't what happened, and they were bailed out. Am I correct in thinking that, Matt, that was really the cause of it, was giving out these loans to try and get blacks on the housing ladder?
Well, there were, you know, a lot of these companies, because these banks are Jewish owned, and the idea of turning down a black guy is verboten to them. It wasn't just a racial thing. That was a part of it. You have these nonprofit groups that were staging protests in front of banks if they got their people turned down for loans. But they got commissions for getting a mortgage. They were giving away credit to anybody. I mean, we all heard stories about dogs getting credit cards in the mail. I bought my wedding ring, or my wife and I, our wedding ring, and I got a $2,000 line of credit. I didn't even have a job. And this was 1998. It was absolute absurdity. And the actual belief was that this economic – and it was considered economic growth. It was nothing more than debt and assumptions. It comes down to perception. And so, yeah, non-whites, Hispanics, being given loans for no good reason. You know, the people who gave these loans got commissions for getting them. And the people who gave them the loan actually were owned by the same company. So it was a blatant conflict of interest. And they were called horrible names. They didn't give it to you. But it's also poor whites. It's also people who were refinancing and didn't have to. People who had no right getting a house. Young families who should have been in an apartment. I mean, they were pushing it like any other commodity, refinancing every other day. But the problem was these were floating rate loans. So in the beginning, it may be, you know, 2%, but after 2 years, it goes to 5. And if you don't pay, it goes to 10. Now, all of a sudden, everyone's underwater. And I think the banks were well aware that they were going to be taken care of, because the same people who ran the banks were in the Fed. The Fed is just a consortium of banks anyway. And of course, the Treasury Secretary, everyone in the Department of the Treasury. And the media was deliberately, you know, obscuring the distinctions between the Fed and the Treasury Department when it came to so-called paying back these loans. These were supposed to be loans to banks. But of course, you know, that simply wasn't true.
We've also got the issue of when people can't actually pay back the mortgage after a certain amount of time, it forecloses, and then the bank takes ownership of that house. And the bank has actually not given up anything in commensurate value in the first place. All they've done is add the amount of money onto a ledger. It's just figures that they put there when somebody takes out a loan. They haven't actually put any money in of value because it's all just built on debt. That when somebody can't pay the debt, then the bank gets to take ownership of something that does have real value, somebody's property, somebody's home. So you've also got that added to it as well. It wasn't just the fact that they were bailed out, they were given all this money that the American taxpayer had to pay back, but they also were able to pick up all these properties and own everything. It seems to me they do this, you know, every so often. Didn't we have a similar thing happen back with the Great Depression and when the Fed first started? Am I correct in thinking that, Matt?
I'm not sure about the Depression, because the war had the federal government take everything over, and it changed everything. I know the 1997 currency crisis in Thailand, which affected all of East Asia, then permitted American banks to control the banks and most of the financial institutions of the entire area. These countries aren't really independent anymore, and the only ones that survived were China, Taiwan, and North Korea, because they had and Burma, because they had state-owned central banks. So the U.S. was able to come in after that crisis and take everything over, and the whole thing was started by George Soros's betting on the Thai baht currency and driving up the price way beyond what it was worth. But eventually, the debt comes due. Eventually, people realize this is based on absolutely nothing. And the media has a lot to do with this, because they were hyping this stuff all the time. They were talking about the American dream is back. I follow this very, very closely. But the lies that were told about the bailout system as a whole and the lies that politicians were – now, you know, politicians knew they were being conned here because it was Paulson and Bernanke – from the Fed that were, you know, presenting this stuff to the Senate Banking Committee and you know, making up stories about it. You know, this is going to stabilize the economy, create investor confidence. It was going to reform everything. It's never going to happen again. And yet the minute that this was proposed, the market went back up again. But let me just give you one example. You know, the way that they surveyed people, the Pew Research Center, when this first happened, they were trying to mute outrage. Here's how they asked the question. They said, as you may know, the government is potentially investing billions to try to keep financial institutions and markets secure. Do you think this is the right thing or the wrong thing for the government to be doing? That's how they worded the question. They didn't say anything about taxpayer money. They didn't say anything. And this is how they worded the question over and over again. So newspapers were saying, yes, Americans support this. They understand the importance of stable financial markets. And yet, once it became clear, you know, the fact that there was no real fallout from this, that the regime was able to gamble with people's money, lose. And remember, money never disappears. It just changes hands. And then demand taxpayer money to get back on track again. And the only thing they did with that money was consolidate. So now it's more of an oligarchy than ever before. And they're expecting it to happen again.
Well, this is what they do, isn't it? They crash the economy and they make huge rewards for themselves out of it. Well, we've got a quote here which sort of explains what goes on before this happens. This is from a guy called R.J. Schiller, and he has a list of qualities that generally accompany a debt bubble in housing. It says, number one, there's a sharp increase in the price of an asset like real estate or shares. Number two, there's great public excitement about said increases. Number three, an accompanying media frenzy. Number four, stories of people earning much money causing envy among the people who are not. Number five, growing interest in asset class among the general public. Number six, new era theories to justify unprecedented price increases. And number seven, a decline in lending standards. So are you observing all those things happening at the moment, Matt?
Yes, absolutely. And I want to note, Robert J. Shiller won the Nobel Prize in economics in 2013. And, you know, he wrote Irrational Exuberance, which is exactly about this kind of thing. And I love this description because it explains the role of the media here, the media frenzy that they're making all this money. Oh, refinance now won't cost you anything. You know, new era theories. Now, this was happening a lot. We were hearing things like, well, we don't need manufacturing to be a successful economy. Perception is all that matters. A dynamic housing market is all that matters. You know, I mean, people were saying this is how it's going to be. This is going to last forever. I'm seeing it everywhere. I'm seeing it today, and I'm seeing it. I was seeing it at the time clearly. I was off by a couple of years when the crash would happen. I said it would be 2006. It was 2008. And the decline in lending standards. You know, the problem is with not all commodities, not just housing. The American economy is so massively productive. The population as a whole has to be able to buy it all. Well, that hasn't been the case. Especially since this crash, there's been no money. So everyone puts everything on credit cards. They've already eaten up all the equity in their homes. And as a result, you have to give credit cards to everybody. Either you have inventory sitting on the shelves and laying workers off, or you give very, very weak standards for credit. And anyone in America can get a credit card right now. I don't care how bad their credit is. I don't care who they are, because American firms need this stuff bought and sold, at least for no other reason than for the illusion that that things are going well. And yes, the sharp increase, I mean, houses were tripling in value in my area at the time. And I was the only one saying, this doesn't make any sense. Nothing has changed about the American economy. This is all lies. It's going to crash. And I got out beforehand, thank God. And my mother did too. I'm happy because we were following this so closely.
So there's a declining in lending standards now, which we can see again, where they're just handing credit out to people without checking once again. But the solution to this, I mean, really, there's a biblical solution, which is a jubilee. And every 50 years, I think it is, all the debts get reset back to zero. And that is what the Christian solution would have been when this happened, would have just been to set debts back at zero and start again. But they didn't do that. Instead, they came out with this idea for the bailout plan, which was apparently, it included measures to stop foreclosures on many homes, which is the only reason why it passed. And we've got a quote here from somebody called Lawrence Summers. And in Lawrence Summers' letters, he laid out a 5-point plan in which the bailout was pitched as a kind of giant populist program to help ordinary Americans. Obama, Summers vowed, would use the money to stimulate bank lending to put people back to work. He even went so far as to say that banks would be denied funding unless they agreed to increase lending above baseline levels. He promised that tough and transparent conditions would be imposed on bailout recipients who would not be allowed to use bailout funds towards enriching shareholders or executives. As in the original TARP bill, he pledged that bailout money would be used to aid homeowners in foreclosure. And lastly, he promised that the bailouts would be temporary, with a plan for exit of government intervention implemented as quickly as possible. So there's two things that I want to ask you, Matt. Did that actually stop any foreclosures of homes? And did the government intervention leave as quickly as possible? Or is the government intervention still there?
Well, remember, we're talking about the Federal Reserve as well as the Treasury Department. So you could say a government intervention stopped, but that doesn't mean the Fed wasn't still involved in this, because the Fed was the one who was buying all the toxic mortgages. There was no alteration in, you know, Americans were – the bankruptcies were about running 600,000 a month in America in early 2009. I wrote an article on that for the American Free Press at the time. There were no conditions put on people taking TARP money. There were none. That was simply a lie. And even worse than that, they said they're not – you can't give bonuses to your executives with this money. But J. Morgan Chase paid almost $10 billion in bonuses, including almost $700 million at least $1 million. Merrill Lynch lost $27 billion in 2008. They got $10 billion in TARP money, and they still paid almost 1,000 bonuses of at least $1 million. Now, these are bonuses going to executives who failed, who brought the company to bankruptcy. But that's what happens when the same people running J.P. Morgan Chase are in the Treasury Department and at the Fed. Lawrence Summers, who was president of Harvard University, who oversaw the destruction of the American economy and the Russian economy. He's been all over the place as an economist, all the elite organizations. Doesn't seem to affect his reputation, though. He was involved in the Russian privatization. The man's an absolute criminal. And, you know, so this was all storytelling. But I refuse to believe that politicians hearing this didn't realize that they were being conned. I mean, they're con men. You can't con a con man. So this is, you know, this was incredibly outrageous. Now, what happened in 2010, Obama created the Small Business Lending Fund. Now, small business in that world is anything with a capitalization of less than $10 billion. That's small. And it was almost free money. So they were able to pay some of the TARP money back by taking loans using that program. So if you go to their websites now, they'll say, oh, we paid all this money back with interest. And the answer is no, they didn't pay it back. They simply took more money that no one knows about. The Fed has reserve standards where you have to keep a certain amount of money at the Fed, every major bank, as a cushion for bad times. Well, it used to be that you couldn't charge interest on that. Well, part of the TARP bailout was now you can charge interest on it. It was something like $10 billion. In 2008, it's almost $1 trillion now, which now they have access to. These are the really sneaky ways that they got around that. Bonuses, they gave bonuses in stock options rather than in cash. If they took money from the Small Business Lending Fund, the bonus prohibition went away. See, this is the stuff that, you know, Americans really can't follow. You're not going to hear this on CNN. It's not a good story. It's too complicated. Banks weren't asked at all to monitor what they did with the money.
Normally, if you fail, you lose your job, don't you? You lose your job if you fail. You don't get rewarded. And we were told that as long as the banks held the TARP money, they were barred from paying out big cash bonuses to top executives. But despite having received a TARP bailout of $35 billion, J.P. Morgan Chase paid out $8.7 billion in bonuses, including 626 bonuses of at least $1 million. Merrill Lynch, which lost $27 billion in 2008, accepted a TARP bailout of $10 billion, but still managed to pay 696 bonuses of at least $1 million and $3.6 billion in bonuses overall. Bonuses for what, one might ask. Goldman Sachs paid out 953 bonuses of at least $1 million. and 6 bonuses at 10 million, while still accepting a 2009 government TARP bailout of 10 billion. The New York Times, January 18, 2011, reported that some Goldman Sachs bonuses in 2008 were as high as 150 million. This was at the same time the company was steering many of its clients into bankruptcy, and Citigroup, which lost 27 billion in 2008, nonetheless paid 5.3 billion in bonuses that year, with 738 people getting more than $1 million. 54 received more than $5 million, while the Senior Leadership Committee got 126 million, and Citigroup paid these bonuses even though it accepted support of $45 billion from TARP. Well, how were they able to do that if they were supposed to be banned from paying out bonuses if they had TARP money, Matt?
Well, they simply did it through taking money from other sources, like the other program I mentioned to you. There was a lot of these. TARP was just one. You had TALF, TAF, PPIP, TLGP. I don't even know what they stand for anymore. These were all different programs of bailing out. TARP was the only one that really got media attention. Not to mention there was $8 trillion in secret emergency funds that the Fed awarded to Wall Street. And that was only mentioned after the fact. They're simply more powerful than the government is. The government earns it, you know, raises its money through these very same banks. That's how the government functions. You know, the government isn't more powerful than banks. Banks are more, you can't regulate someone more powerful than you. When Bernie Sanders says, I'm going to regulate the banks, I said, well, how are you going to do it other than holding it up? I said, you don't regulate the banks. The banks regulate you. And they were able to, and not to mention, you know, the chairman of the St. Louis Fed back at the time said, if we were going to go through Citibank's books, he said it would take 40,000 regulators or 40,000 auditors a decade, was his almost exact quote. 40,000 regulators over a decade to even begin to go through the books here. That everything is so complicated, they deliberately make it complicated. You're talking about every conceivable kind of complex exchange. They said there's no way these banks can really be audited in any way because it's such immense complexity, and they do that on purpose. So there's really no way to know.
So they used other facilities to do it, because TARP did indeed bar big cash bonus payouts by firms that still owed money to the government, but those firms were allowed to issue extra compensation to executives in the form of long-term restricted stock. An independent research firm asked to analyze the stock options for the New York Times found that the top five executives at each of the 18 biggest bailout recipients received a total of $142 million in stocks and options. That's plenty of money all by itself, but thanks in large part to the government's overt display of support for those firms, the value of those options has soared to $457 million, an average of $4 million per executive. So that's three times as much. I mean, just the fact that the government are backing these companies is actually tripled the value of this stock, which was handed out in compensation to get around the fact that they weren't actually allowed to hand over cash bonuses. So, I mean, they're making a fortune, yeah, aren't they?
You see how it works? And now the next quote, I'm kind of getting ahead of ourselves, but because these are the same people on both sides of the aisle, they're buying up stocks in their own firms, knowing full well that they're getting TARP money, that they're getting tax breaks. Some of the other aspects of the different bailouts included very low taxes, low regulation. In fact, you know, lending to families has plummeted. These major banks don't do much of that anymore. You know, one of the biggest things that they've done here is consolidate, which is something that I don't think, you know, anyone's really talking about. But this money, this bailout money went to consolidate the industry. Chase Bear Stearns deal, Wells Fargo, Wachovia, Bank of America bought Merrill Lynch. So now you have an oligarchy in almost a monopoly here. The same people who run the Treasury Department, and of course the same people in the Fed. But because they knew that they were going to be bailed out, the stock that they were given soared in value.
Well, as you said, alongside the $700 billion in TARP loans, there was also $8 trillion in secret emergency lending that the Fed awarded to Wall Street. Loans that were only disclosed to the public after Congress forced an extraordinary one-time audit of the Federal Reserve. Meanwhile, at the same moment that leading banks were taking trillions in secret loans from the Fed, top officials at those firms were buying up stock in their companies, privy to insider info that was not available to the public at large. Stephen Friedman, a Goldman director who was also chairman of the New York Fed, bought more than $4 million worth of Goldman stock over a five-week period in December 2008 and January 2009, years before the extent of the firm's lifeline from the Fed was made public. Citigroup CEO Vikram Pandit bought nearly $7 million in Citi stock in November 2008, just as his firm was secretly taking on $99.5 billion in Fed loans. Jamie Dimon brought more than $11 million in Chase stock in early 2009, at a time when his firm was receiving as much as $60 billion in secret Fed loans. So we've got insider trading here as well. Just who is going to take these banks to task, Matt? I mean, it's just as you say, isn't it? You know, the government has... You know, it takes its orders from these banks, because all of this is, you know, it's high crime that's going on here, and yet nobody's doing anything about it.
Well, I want to address the issue that they paid this money back. If you look at the list, it looks like three quarters of the recipients actually paid the money back with interest. Here's the problem. Most of this money was raised from the Fed, not the federal government. So when Obama said, yeah, we made a profit off of this, no, the Fed made a profit off this. They gave the money back to themselves. I mentioned the fund, the reserve fund that has to sit at the Fed that now has interest attached to it. They made a fortune off of that. The lower taxes, so they're not paying as much in taxes. So what they were paying when they paid the Fed back, they were actually just paying their taxes. In a million other different ways, they never paid this money back. They simply paid themselves. You know, the Fed isn't the federal government, and most people don't know that. So they're paying the Fed back where this money comes from. And Obama gets up there and says, oh yes, they've paid this all back. Not to mention that there were federal government was offering loans at 0.01%, and they were taking that money and using that money to pay the TARP money back. So it's nothing but scams. They didn't pay a dime back. They used this money to consolidate and give massive bonuses and make the market more dangerous than it ever has been.
You know, what's really amazing about this is, you know, the left pays no attention to it whatsoever. What does the left talk about? Oh, we want to see Donald Trump's tax returns. Well, what about investigating these bank bailouts and seeing just what these banks got up to, rather than trying to see one individual's tax returns? Anyway, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you, with Grandpa Lampshade accompanying me. God bless and hail victory.